Hi, everybody, and welcome back to our work with the rays and the initiations. It's in the latter part of the book. Now, what we're beginning here is called Section 2, but I call Section 2, this is Section 2 of Section 2. And I quit it a little bit early last time, after about 45 minutes, because we were beginning an entirely new section. So I figured the best thing to do would be to do this section on its own merits. And, you know, it is extensive. If you look at it from pages 556 in the book, The Rays and the Initiations. I remember when Mary Bailey, she was quite a stickler, you know, I think she had the moon in Virgo. She corrected me on this point. I said, Destiny of the Nations. She said, The Destiny of the Nations. I said, Rays and Initiations. She said, The Rays and the Initiations. So I learned my one of my lessons about exactitude at that point. Anyway, this is called The Aspirant and the Major Initiations. What do we mean by major? Are they the major seven or nine? There are minor initiations which occur before the first initiation, and some of them quite a bit before, and interim initiations that occur on the astral plane between the first and second major initiations. From another perspective, of course, major initiations are those that begin with the third degree, which is the beginning of the type of initiation cycle that the masters consider to be real, and not simply initiations of the threshold, such as the first and second monastic initiations are. But there are these earlier initiations which have to do with the opening of certain petals in the egoic lotus, and the beginning of group sense, and the beginning of unselfishness, and so forth. These are delivered in part by the Christ, but in part by the Mahachohan. And in my book on the egoic lotus, I go over those things, these minor initiations. But let's see what he means by major initiations. This is just my anticipation of what he might mean. Okay. We now approach the second part of our theme, dealing with the major initiations. Okay, so we will see which initiations he calls, quote, major. We will do so primarily from the standpoint of the ray energies. After all, this book is called The Rays and the Initiations. Actually, the rays, in a way, are a higher order of energy than the astrological energies, and are more affiliated with the ray 2 approach to understanding energy, whereas the astrological energy is more associated with the ray 3 approach. So we will do this, deal with the major initiations from the standpoint of the ray energies, considering the subject from the initiate's point of view. We remember that all the work done in this, the last several hundred pages of this book, and even from the eighth rule onward, are written from the perspective of the initiate. Though when you think about it, it's kind of hard to imagine that the first seven rules were not written from the perspective of the initiate. They seem to be, in a way. I wonder if you realize, my brother, that this has never been done. Okay. The teaching hitherto given out on initiation has been pictorially and symbolically presented. Perhaps, we might say, not so much in terms of exactitude of energies. The understanding of the process was dependent on right interpretation. Well, I suppose this is always the case, but materialization was all too possible. In this materialistic age, that interpretation has been largely material in nature. We might even say largely formal. Emphasis has been laid upon the tangible and supposed form aspect of initiation. It is quite different than we imagine. Okay, I here propose a different approach and would ask you to keep in mind some words out of the ancient archives, which are as follows. Now, whenever we get into the ancient archives, you know, it's always a question of whether we can interpret this correctly, but let us see. Whoop. Gone too far. Okay. Energy is all there is, O Chela, in the light, but is not known. I guess from the very beginning, when the ray of the absolute precipitates into the universal logos of a universe, it's all energy. Energy is all there is, O Chela, in the light. And that is the, in a way, the second phase of the six stages of discipleship. But here, I think it means something more general. Something more general is meant than the second of the six stages of discipleship, but is not known. It is the cause of knowledge and its application and its comprehension leads to expanded understanding. And its application and its comprehension, that's it. And its application and its comprehension lead to expanded understanding. So basically, they're saying here that energy causes knowledge. Through energy, the worlds were made. And through that energy, they make progression. You know, energy is really most mysterious when you think about it. You know, you try to define what energy really is, and you find that it's not so easy if you apply a metaphysical standard. Energy, of course, is that which changes and that which causes change, and that which has been precipitated from a non-precipitated state, which we call the absolute, or more materially, maybe the absolute deity or absolute infinity. Whatever comes forth from this cyclic ray of the absolute is energy. There is naught else. So there is really nothing solid, nothing formal in the or tangible in the formal sense. Everything that we see, that we witness, that we encounter is energy. Through energy, the worlds were made or become, and through that energy, they make progression. Progression towards the, of the lower emanated aspects towards the higher archetypal aspects. Through energy, the forms unfold and die. Through energy, the kingdoms manifest and disappear below the threshold of the world, whichever is and will be forever. And this, of course, this is the archetypal world, the world of being, we might say. Through energy, the cross is mounted, which, of course, detaches us from the lower forms of energy. And from the vortex of the four uniting forces meeting at the center, the initiate passes through the door and is propelled into the light, ever a greater light, a light which grows from cycle into unto cycle and is known as supernal energy itself, until the light, so to speak, ends in becoming the universal logos. Now, you know, I realize I've interrupted that reading quite a bit, so I'm just going to read it as it is, and maybe more understanding comes that way. Energy is all there is, O Chela in the light, but is not known. It is the cause of knowledge, and its application and its comprehension lead to expanded understanding. Through energy, the worlds were made, and through that energy, they make progression. Through energy, the forms unfold and die. Through energy, the kingdoms manifest and disappear below the threshold of the world, whichever is and will be forever, and which will be forever. Through energy, the cross is mounted, and from the vortex of the four uniting forces, the initiate passes through the door and is propelled into the light, a light which grows from cycle unto cycle and is known as supernal energy itself. The whole universal logos is energy. Everything emanated from the universal logos is energy. And I suppose the supreme energy is absolute infinitude within the post-pralayic state. That absolute infinitude is quite interesting because it ever is inconceivable to man, though we can take a few steps towards its conception and realize that essentially we have nowhere to go and nothing to do. Once energy manifests in the Mahamayavic worlds, then we have a whole program of limitation to enact. Every universe is a severe limitation upon absolute infinitude. As a matter of fact, it's an absolute limitation. It's an utter limitation. It's an absolute infinitesimal compared to absolute infinitude, which we all are, and in a sense we have nothing further we can become, and no devolution is possible. Nothing can be added to us. Nothing can be subtracted to us. We are essentially the uttermost, but periodically the cyclic experiment with limitation necessarily must be undergone, because otherwise absolute infinitude would not be absolute infinitude unless it could include the experience of limitation. And limitation, no matter how big the factor compared to absolute infinitude may be, it can be immense, it can be tiny, it's always the same absolute infinitesimal. Well, one day maybe I'll understand the mathematics to be able to prove or disprove that, but for now it seems correct to me. I shall, now the Tibetan goes on, and let's see what we just did here. Basically, he wants us to keep in mind some words out of the ancient archives. That's what he wants us to do. So it's all about energy, and energy is the very universal substance. It is life itself. But we might say it's a precipitation of a kind of abstraction, an absolute abstraction, which is still more essentially life and beingness. Words begin to fail, but, you know, we will be looking for the language of the monad, and if I'm fortunate enough to be able to distribute and publish or make available this book that I'm working on called Seeds of the Infinite, then maybe some of these abstruse thoughts will be for us more than words, but will carry some form of realization. I shall not be able, says the Tibetan, to avoid a measure of symbolic approach, and I am forced to use words which will fail to express the truth. Well, you certainly have to admire his fortitude and persistence, given his assessment of the situation. He can't speak in terms of the absolute truth of his subject, but must take a symbol which is perhaps apprehensible to us, more familiar to us, and which has a connection with the truth that he cannot express. And then again, his constant plaint, I am forced to use words which will fail to express the truth. But at least I think they'll get us a little bit closer to that truth. The extent of your understanding will be based upon your point in evolution, upon your attitude of mind as you approach this theme, you know, and we might say, is it critical, resistant, or receptive? And upon the point of tension you are able to achieve, you know, tension is focused, immovable will. It's in other words, it's extremity of focus, which with progressive intensification reveals more and more of the revelation which ever is. So it's all here, and given the proper point of tension, the proper consciousness, proper degree of development, it's all apprehensible, it's all cognizable or perceivable, but it all depends where we are in our ability to sustain the kind of intense focusing which will bring revelation forth. Initiation is, in its simplest definition, an understanding of the way. The way, the path, and of course that word way is used for a very high section of the path, right? The word way is associated with a very high, how about a very, very high section of the path, and we call it the WHE, the Way of Higher Evolution, which we can say eventually leads to great constellations and ultimately to the Pleiades, but then, of course, it's got to continue because only the tiniest part of the journey has been accomplished. Once the Pleiades are reached, we've got galactic arms, we've got galaxies, we've got families of galaxies, we've got huge internal structures and entities, and, you know, finally, what is finally, we have the one and only in any particular cosmos. So initiation is, in its simplest definition, an understanding of the way. For understanding is a revealing energy which permits you to achieve. Let's see, through understanding, what can we say? Through understanding, more comes to light and permits advancement. So we seek to understand. Beget ye understanding. First, beget ye understanding. Initiation is a growth in experience and the attainment thereby of a point of tension, a requisite point of tension. The initiate is always more, what can we say, experienced in certain regards than the non-initiate. So a growth in experience. And of course, we are usually talking here about subjective experience. Holding that point of tension, that's the key. You know, you might just instantaneously achieve something, but can you focus so intensely that nothing is allowed to interrupt it? Holding that point of tension, the initiate sees that which lies ahead. Okay, that's part of the initiation ceremony. Always in the, so in the ceremony, of initiation, a vision of the future is always conferred as an incentive to further work and progress, result in progress. So in Initiation Human and Solar, the stages of the ceremony for the first, second initiation and some other fragments for the other initiations are given. Remember that, you know, the first two initiations are ceremonial, the next three are more symbolic, and the ones after that have to do with energy altogether, with light and revelation and realization, the realization of the content, if we can talk about it that way, of that which is not formal in the way we consider form. Initiation, these are wonderful definitions here, you know, things that we really want to remember. I know it's hard when reading all these words, hundreds of pages, maybe to remember important things, but then, you know, we should impress upon ourselves what we consider to be really important. You know, press the bridge of your nose, as Master Moria says, when you really want to impress something upon your consciousness, physical brain. Amazing, isn't it, how such a concrete act can facilitate impression. Okay. So initiation permits of a progressive entry into the mind of the creating logos. And he says this last definition is one of the most important I've ever given. And so ponder on my words. Well, you know, somehow we want to really make that bigger, don't we? Because it is more important. Initiation permits of a progressive entry into the mind of the creating logos. And, we, you know, we might say that we become more and more identified, IDFD. And if not, we're going to make it so. IDFD, identified. We become more and more identified with the great being in whom we live and move and have our being. This last definition is perhaps one of the most important I've ever given. A great creative process is going on. It's not as if creation occurred and that was it. You know, some of the scriptures give you that sense that God, whoever God is, maybe the planetary logos, was very active for 6 days, rested on the seventh, and days, of course, are great cycles, and then stopped being creative. Well, so God is, in a way, ongoing creativity in action, attempting to manifest a sustained archetype in the world of being. So ponder on this, right? Initiation permits a progressive entry into the mind of the creating logos. And then, of course, what will this mean? This will mean that one cannot help but be an agent of the divine plan. Ponder on my words. That's how the second ray does it, though, you know, philosophical studies with the third ray involve a lot of pondering. Maybe, you know, pondering is ubiquitous, but the second ray type tends to brood over things more, perhaps, until the requisite ideas and energies are gathered and applied to the subject or object of the pondering. Initiation permits a progressive entry into the mind of the ongoingly creative logos, the creating logos. In other words, we might say as monads in expression, in extension, M-I-E-X-S. Monad in extension. I'm going to just do that. M-I-E-X-X-S. And we'll do it this way. Monads, that's all of us, in extension. As monads in extension, we want to be part of the creative process. We aspire to be an integral part of the ongoing creative process of the planetary logos, and then later of other and greater logoi. It's hard for me to leave that definition. You know how our creativity does increase, and how we know more and more what we're doing and why we're doing it, so that life is lived according to pure reason and not just in a happenstantial manner, doing what we do under the impulse of blind desire, a desire which is not knowing the nature of the plan. Okay. Initiation is a system. Doesn't he give the definitions here? Magnificent. Is a system or a scientific process whereby the septinative energies which compose the sum total of all existences within our planetary life are realized and consciously used for the working out of the divine plan. Well, not all those septinates are yet in place. You know, the seven continental centers aren't quite there yet, and the seven root races have not yet materialized. But septinates are general. As we might say, the right relationship with all planetary septinates. So it's very comprehensive, and it deals with the major energy structures within our planetary logos. And it allows us to use these energies in line with that which the planetary logos intends, with that which he wills. It might also be stated that initiation is a method whereby the circulation of energies is furthered by the opening or the awakening of certain planetary and human centers to the impact of their ray quality, potency, and divine intention. So, centers awaken to their ray and energy potential. And this is microcosmic as well as macrocosmic. The awakening of certain planetary and human centers to the impact of their ray quality. And this never occurs all at once, but it is gradual and progressive. That is why the higher centers awaken later with their particular ray potentials. The lower centers awaken earlier and do not yet have the higher centers as guides and controllers. Later, they will. So in a way, what DK is saying is initiation is the awakening of the full energy system of man and of higher types of, quote, men, you know, the heavenly man, the grand heavenly man, and who knows what we would call it beyond that point. It is this statement which lies at the heart of the teaching of Laya Yoga, or the science of the centers. There is some good books on Laya Yoga, but they're written according to the Hindu system, and sometimes you would wonder whether Master DK and authors of Laya Yoga were describing the same system, the same potentials of the chakras, the same energies and rays. They seem quite divergent, but they're certainly worth reading. You know, it's an older form of yoga, but in the Aquarian age, since Aquarius has so much to do with the etheric body, the science of Laya Yoga is going to be awakening. Okay, so that was, we have just had here, just had some definitions. DFN, define, okay. Let's do DEFS, and we'll call that definitions, and DF, okay. Definitions, it's kind of a fifth-ray word. It's got the word finite in it, doesn't it? We just have had some definitions of initiation, and we are to ponder on them. There's so many different ways that the DK can come at this subject of initiation. I'm told, or I seem to remember, Madame Rorick writing, or was it Master Moria writing through Madame Rorick, that he didn't particularly like the word initiation. Maybe it's more of a second-ray word, because the higher method of teaching truth according to the second ray is through the science of initiation. Maybe first-ray types have a different way of describing a progressive progress in consciousness and power and so forth. It seems that if you are a first-rate type and you are subject to Master DK's teaching, then you will learn something about initiation. And, you know, there were quite a few first-rate types in his group, although every one of those first-rate souls, pretty much because they continued studying with Master DK, were on the second ray monadically. I can't say all, but that would be the general tendency. Okay, now we have next the relation of the seven rays to initiations. This is maybe one of our major subjects here. What page was it in Rays and the Initiations where he really does relate the seven rays to the initiations? Is it, let's see, what is it? I can't remember. 430 or something like that. Maybe not. It's 400 and something, you know, and, Well, let's see if I can think of something that is related to it. Yeah. Okay. Let's say direction, science, integration. Maybe we'll see it here. Yeah. Here it is. Okay. So this particular section that we have already done is page 340, some 200 pages before the place where we are now, and it's pretty much about the rays and initiations, and maybe Master DK will be elaborating this wonderful chart, which gives us the name of the initiation with its number and the major center involved, not all, as a number of centers are involved, the particular ray involved, the plane involved, and certain words which encapsulate the progress. And notice in initiation number one, someone said to me, and I think it's correct, that we're not dealing here with sex magic, but with beginnings, relationship, sex, and magic. I think this is just one of those kind of typos or problems with editing, you know. Anyway, it goes all the way to the ninth initiation. Last year at the University of the Seven Rays conference, we at least imaginatively went through these nine initiations in a meditative receptive mode. Of course, it's a totally imaginative experience, but maybe something was gained in terms of the higher possibilities. So here we have the relation of the seven rays to initiations, and I would say also check out page 340 in this book. It will be obvious to you, as energy is the basis of our entire manifested world, you know, and let's just say the in modern terms, the Einsteinian formula. How about that? Prove this. An initiation is a condition of consciousness, wherein the fully prepared disciple utilizes the available energies at the time of initiation, I would say with the help of the initiator, to bring about changes within consciousness of a momentous and revelatory nature. An initiation, well, we're going to copy it. An initiation is a condition of consciousness wherein the fully prepared disciple, and note that, because we can't sort of barge in the chamber of initiation unless we want to pay the price. Well, we'd never be allowed to do that anyway. So an initiation is a condition of consciousness wherein the fully prepared disciple utilizes the available energies at the time of initiation to bring about changes within consciousness, and I might say within his own energy system, of a momentous and revelatory nature. You know, we're pretty much in a darkened room, and even if we move into a less darkened room, we're still relatively in a darkened room. So it goes on always. We have to accommodate ourselves to the new space into which we've entered, and we have to master its conditions and utilize its energies and service, but then we will find that we are outgrowing its limitations, and we will be moving on into a still more lighted room, which will present its limitations eventually. But that moving on will bring about changes in our presently limited consciousness of a momentous and revelatory nature. Each initiation puts the initiate in a position to control certain related energies and enables him to become increasingly a trained manipulator of those energies. I mean, this is so clearly stated and, you know, gives us a view of initiation which is not childish and not glamorous. It's all about energy and the control and manipulation of energy. Each initiation puts the initiate in a position to control. Now, you know, you see how much the power of Saturn is present there, how much the first ray, the seventh ray, are present here. We're not talking about just allowing energies to run rampant. We are the agent of control, control certain related energies related to the particular initiation, and enables him to become increasingly not just a manipulator of those energies, but a trained manipulator according to the divine plan. Okay. Each initiation gives him understanding of the related energy and its field of activity, and on page 340, we saw the related energy, you know, seventh ray for the first initiation, sixth for the second, fifth for the third, four for the fourth, and ray one for the fifth, ray three for the sixth, ray two for the seventh, and that's as far as it goes. The energies begin to combine after that. So each initiation reveals to him the quality and the type of stimulation to be evoked when brought into contact with any particular ray energy. It has to be, shall we say, has to be a positive evocation when contacting a particular ray energy. Each initiation establishes relationship between the initiate and the ray energy involved, so that he can receive properly and manipulate properly. So that gradually, no matter what may be his soul ray or his personality ray, excuse me, he can work with the quality and creative aspect of all the rays, the ray which is prominent at a particular initiation is not subject to the ray of the candidate. Oh, come on. Of the candidate. I mean, I could be a second ray soul, and I could be approaching an initiation which required the fourth ray, and the fourth ray would dominate whatever my ray might be. Okay. So gradually, he can work with the quality and creative aspect of all the rays, because he has to contact every one of the rays as he passes through the seven initiations, which we usually discuss, though ever retaining a greater facility to work on his own soul ray and later on the ray, later with the ray of the monad, one of the three major rays of aspect. And I would call, I call this the ultimate monadic ray. Ultimate monadic ray, as I hypothesize at this time and at my present level of ignorance, that there are two monadic rays. Okay, monadic rays. One pertaining to the monadic plane and one pertaining to the logoic plane. And those pertaining to the logoic plane are indeed either one, two, or three. But those pertaining to the monadic plane would be one through seven, or could be one through seven. DK talks about this, about monads on the sixth ray, monads on the seventh ray. He tells how monads on the sixth ray aren't going to get along well with monads on the seventh ray during a seventh ray age. He talks about monads on the fifth ray taking the path of magnetic work. And, you know, the other rays, of course, one, two, and three are discussed. I'm not sure if he discusses monads on the fourth ray, but when you think about Master Serapis and his head of the fourth ray ashram, in one respect at least, he has to be a monad on the fourth ray, whatever his ultimate monadic ray might be. So this is a hypothesis, and time will prove whether there is reason and accuracy to this hypothesis. I would ask you to remember that all human beings must finally express the quality and livingness of one of the three rays of aspect, even if in time and space their souls may originally be upon one of the four rays of attribute. And since the word is expression, it's almost as if the four rays of attribute turn into one of the rays of aspect. It is almost as if the four, rays of attribute turn into one of the four rays of aspect. Although, you know, in actual fact, you can go through the fourth initiation on any one of the seven rays. And as I say, it seems pretty clear that monadically as well, just from what is found in the texts, that you can have a monad on any one of the seven rays, but eventually the monads of attribute have to resolve into the monads of aspect. And does this happen on the monadic plane, or does this happen on the logoic plane, which I hypothesize time and revelation will tell. It might be useful to enumerate the rays and thus refresh the memory of the neophyte. I guess we're all neophytes when we compare ourselves to the knowledge of the masters and the very, very extensive knowledge of master and DK. So repetition has a big place in the learning process. So, you know, we may, at this time, be primarily on one of the rays, monadically on one of the rays of attribute. 7, 6, 5, 4. It's quite possible. He talks about at least the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh ray monads. So, and that will, of course, condition all that happens in terms of our soul ray and our personality expression. Every aspect of the man is really the monad, ultimately. But one day, you know, on what plane it may be, maybe logoic, one of the major rays, the major ray of the monad, as is sometimes talked about by DK in kind of a subtle hint, will be 1, 2, or 3. And that can mean that even a powerful first ray soul with even a first ray subsidiary monad could have an ultimate monadic ray on 2 or 3. But let us see, because the science of the seven rays is still very much in its infancy, and we're just feeling our way through it at the moment. So anyway, the rays of aspect, the ray of power, will, or purpose. I mean, this is not new to you, you know, these names. Number 2, the ray of love, wisdom. Number 3, the ray of creative intelligence. that is the term he prefers, creative intelligence. But also the ray of activity. And the ray of abstract mind or mentality. The rays have different names, and some of them are really quite interesting. He drops them here and there, you know, what does he call the second ray? The ray of cohesion, something of that nature. Maybe it's a little more complex than that, but he drops the titles of these rays, and if you pick them up, they shed light upon the overall meaning of the ray. The rays of attribute, okay, the ray of harmony through conflict, or harmony, beauty, and art, the ray of concrete knowledge, concrete science or knowledge. And interestingly, you know, even the Black Lodge develops this ray to an extraordinary, unbelievable extent, because they pursue a different line of evolution, Master DK tells us. The ray of idealism or devotion. The ray of order, organization, or ceremonial magic. He's just told us he doesn't like so much or find completely suitable the word ceremonial magic when dealing with the seventh ray, but, you know, perforce we use what we must. Now, it is contact with the energy of the third ray of active intelligence, or, and I really like this definition, have memorized this one, you know, as it is sometimes called, the acute energy of divine mental perception. As I say, you know, you can say, well, it's the ray of creative intelligence, it's the ray of activity, it's the ray of abstract mind, but look what additional understanding is added when we think of the acute energy of divine mental perception. Excuse me. It would be very useful upon the cosmic mental plane, wouldn't it? Which admits the consciousness of the initiate into the secrets of the mind of God. And we might say on the cosmic physical plane, the cosmic astral plane, and eventually, and most importantly, on the cosmic mental plane. secrets of the mind of God with which we can cooperate as our initiatory status increases. It is the four rays of attribute which, in the evolutionary cycle, condition his character or apparatus of contact and evoke later his essential quality. And I want to just say this, that in the beginning, all personalities, PRS personalities. Okay, I think we have to give that a go. Okay, PRS personalities. Okay, all personalities. All personalities and all souls. And all souls are found only on the rays of aspect. Okay, so this will be ROAS, and we'll call ROA, rays of aspect. We've already got that. Okay, ROA, rays of aspect. But I think I'd like to improve it. So ROAS, and these are the rays of aspect. Rays of attribute. Yes, all, this is an amazing thought, all souls and all personalities are found initially on the rays of attribute. And eventually they can switch to the three rays of aspect. The three rays of aspect enable him to take the four higher initiations, 6, 7, 8, and 9, which are connected purely with Shambhala. That's another amazing thought, because, you know, even some of these individuals may not even stick around long enough to be associated with Shambhala, but for any length of time, because their ray path at the sixth initiation may take them towards other training planets and out of the solar system altogether. But those who do stay and work in connection with the path of Earth service, they will be connected with Shambhala. And, you know, when we go back to page 340, we see the last several initiations, and we see the third ray is connected with the sixth initiation, the second ray with the seventh, the first ray with the fifth, of course, okay. But then, interestingly enough, the eighth initiation is connected with the four minor rays, and DK is not bringing that out in the section of text we're studying. But initiation 9, the refusal, has to do with the three major rays. So again, let us say, consult. Okay. I've got to always have my red bracket. Sorry for the mechanics, you know, but it'll be easier and with some other technology. So let's see, consult. R and I, page 340. The rays of attribute are also involved. The four rays of attribute, particularly as they are synthesized through the medium of the third ray of aspect, are related more definitely to the hierarchy. Though, you know, entering hierarchy, you can certainly be on the major rays, and therefore are related to the first five initiations. Well, except for, we might say, except for ray one, which is related to the fifth initiation. The rays of aspect, ray one is a ray of aspect. Let's see if I have anything there on the rays of aspect. R-O, This would be ROAS. And this would be right here, ROAS. Oh, that's Race of Attribute, ROASP. Okay, let's try that. Rays of Aspect. So, you know, we have to, he says certain things in certain places, but we have to compare what he has said elsewhere as well to get a more balanced picture. The rays of aspect are essentially related to life or will, the life or will aspect of divinity. The rays of attribute are related to the consciousness aspect, and this is a clear distinction. But, you know, we have to look at the individual cases. In any case, he seems to be saying rays of aspect, ROASP, are related to Shambhala. And the last four initiations, except for initiation 8, where the rays of attribute make their appearance. Well, obviously, he's going to get deeply into the technicalities here. And, you know, we've read other things about the initiations. And what I intend to do after finishing this book is to take the massive compilations on a number of the initiations and really work through them, because then all the text will be there and we'll be able to think about these things in a very comprehensive manner. But in order to keep the integrity of the process, it's necessary to go through the entire book of the rays and the initiations, either in written form, as I did earlier, or in spoken form, in order to have a comprehensive view of that book. And then later, we'll take up all the other things, hopefully, that he has said. So I think, basically, that we can consider this the end of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary. I think it's number 64. I lose track. Today is 11 so far, February 17, and the pages are, this is where I always go astray, we're up to 558. Where did we begin? It was a 555. This is always the search that seems to waste time. I should really think of it ahead of time. 556 to 558. I guess because I'm going into these things in very great detail, we're not really covering more than a couple, three pages at a time. But hopefully what is happening is that some thoughts are being offered which will stimulate your thinking process and help you make the connections which you can make. I make certain connections. That's not all the connections that can be made. It's a mercurial process, and you have your own mercurial process, and things will appear to you that do not appear to me. So this was the beginning of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary number 65, and it'll be pages 558 to something. Not sure when we will begin on this, maybe later tonight, maybe not. And, well, okay, you know, amazing things are being said here. And I think we're going to get a tremendous overview about the initiation process in far greater depth. It's almost as if, well, it did happen that Master DK began working in 1919 with Alice Bailey, and certain things could be said, and even in Cosmic Fire, certain things could be said. And as he went along, the Great World War continued, humanity began to make perhaps all kinds of unexpected progress, and he was given permission to give more. So that, for instance, in the Rays and Initiations, he gave more material on the seven ways of higher evolution, or the seven paths on the way of high revolution, information that was not anticipated that he could give when he first began. So there's been an ongoing adaptation and expansion of the possibilities. Okay, onward we go, and number 65 next, I believe, unless I've made a mistake, and then it'll be 64, but I think it is that, starting with page 558. So thank you for your attendance here or using this video, and just realize, you know, as I realize how much thinking has to go into really making sense of what the Tibetan has been saying here and what he has given, so that we can really absorb it and make it part of our spiritual approach. Okay, see you before long. Bye-bye.